Welcome to the Canadian Breakpoint, a Canadian infectious diseases podcast by Canadian infectious diseases physicians. I'm Summer Stewart, back with Dr. Rupina Pirwal, pediatric infectious diseases specialist in Saskatoon. For this episode, we welcome pharmacist Dr. Roseanne Dalakata and ID specialist Dr. Shakil Pir Mohammed to discuss the Aspire's five-spot audit. Dr. Pirwal.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode of our podcast, The Canadian Breakpoint. Today, we have two very special guests with us who will be speaking about a very important topic or topics in regards to antimicrobials and some work that they have done, including audits and through Aspire. So one of our guests today has done a previous podcast with us, and that's Dr. Pir Mohammed. So I'm sure everyone who's tuned in to season two, episode five, which is gamification in medicine, had an opportunity to hear a lot about that. And that's been a great episode for us. And so we're grateful to have Dr. Pir Mohammed back here today. So thanks so much for joining us. And then our second guest speaker, who hasn't been on the podcast, but we're super excited because we get to see more of a pharmacy specialist approach as well in antimicrobials. And so without further ado, I'm going to introduce Dr. Roseanne Dalakata, who's a clinical pharmacy specialist with the antimicrobial stewardship team at Vancouver General Hospital, Aspires, and clinical instructor with the University of British Columbia Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences. She completed her post-baccalaureate Doctor of Pharmacy degree from the University of Toronto in 2013. She's passionate about the judicious use of antimicrobials to limit the development of antimicrobial resistance and their effect on the environment. Outside of the hospital, she enjoys traveling, skiing, and hiking. So thank you so much, Dr. Dalakata, for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And then, as I mentioned, Dr. Pir Mohammed, I think most of us are know him from the previous episode, but I would like to do a formal introduction for him as well. So Dr. Pir Mohammed completed his fellowship in infectious disease at the University of Toronto in 2016. He began his career with Saskatchewan Health Authority and the University of Saskatchewan as an infectious disease consultant and physician lead of antimicrobial stewardship in Saskatoon. And so that's how we met as well. And then in 2023, Dr. Pir Mohammed embarked upon the next phase of his career, moved to Vancouver, BC, and is currently an infectious disease consultant with Vancouver Coastal Health, and also the regional medical director of Aspires. In his spare time, Dr. Pir Mohammed enjoys tabletop games and escape rooms, which is also fun. All right. So today we're talking about, and I don't think I even introduced the topic because I'm super excited that you guys are here today. And so we will be talking primarily about the five-spot audit with Aspires. And not only that, we will hear from Dr. Dalakata about findings of the audit and other initiatives. And so excited about that, and along with the planetary health study. And then Dr. Pir Mohammed will give us his expertise, which this area is, I think, really important for clinicians as well, to kind of discuss what's that IV to oral switch and that question you get pretty much when you're on call every single time. So super excited to hear about his experiences and his recommendations. So why don't we start with Dr. Dalakata? For our audience, just because most of us aren't really aware about kind of some of the work that's been done in this area, can you summarize the five-spot audit for us that was done by Aspires? And really, what was the goal and how was the audit done?
Yeah, sure. So starting with the goal of antimicrobial stewardship, which is to ensure that the right patient receives the right drug at the right time and by the right route. And we know that switching intravenous antimicrobials to oral administration has many patient care and healthcare system benefits, such as reduced line-related adverse effects like clots and infections, reduced length of stay in hospital for patients, as well as reduced costs for the healthcare system. We also know that the IV formulation has a significantly higher carbon footprint compared to their oral counterparts, particularly in relation to the manufacturing and disposal of the drug delivery systems. And so the goal of this audit was to quantify our IV use of antimicrobials, specifically the highly bioavailable antimicrobials, when oral administration was feasible. And we also wanted to quantify the carbon footprint and costs. And so we did a retrospective chart review of all inpatients at Vancouver General Hospital who received IV antimicrobials on 5 days between August 2023 and April 2024. And all medical services were included, no patients were excluded. We reviewed all patients to determine what proportion could have received oral rather than IV.
And then, what were your main findings with this audit?
So, a total of 128 patients were identified in our audits, and our results showed that 62% of patients received IV when they were eligible to receive at least one dose orally. And the antimicrobials with the highest eligibility for IV to PO switch were azithromycin, being used for respiratory infections, and metronidazole, being used for intra-abdominal infections. And we partnered with researchers at the University of British Columbia to do the carbon footprinting work. And we found that over the 5 days, we could have saved approximately 82,000 grams of CO2 equivalents if we had used oral over IV in the patients that were deemed eligible to receive oral. And so, to put this in perspective, this is the equivalent of driving approximately 400 kilometers in a gas-powered car. We also could have saved approximately $835 in antimicrobial costs over those 5 days. And so, if you scale these numbers up to 1 year, this would be a significant carbon footprint and cost savings. So, it would be roughly the equivalent of saving 6 million grams of CO2 equivalents, which is driving about 29,000 kilometers in your gas-powered vehicle. Or for cost savings, it would be about saving $61,000 per year.
Okay, so quite significant for sure. And probably things that we have never, I think as a clinician, I probably have never thought about. And I use medications like azithromycin and metronidazole probably lately, it feels daily because of mycoplasma and the surge there, but that's kind of slowed down, so that's good. And so in terms of our clinical practice, so I'm guessing at your local site, this information, once it was presented, has that changed kind of practices or how have clinicians used this information
Yeah,
or perceived
so
it?
it's been received very well, I would say, at our site overall. And so I think the first question that we always need to ask ourselves is, does this patient need this antimicrobial? For example, azithromycin. If the patient doesn't need to be on azithromycin, we need to consider stopping the antimicrobial. So then, assuming that this is the right drug for the right patient at the right time, we then suggest that prescribers assess their patients daily for IV to PO switch, especially for these highly bioavailable antimicrobials, and to consider using oral instead of IV when clinically appropriate. We also suggest that prescribers use established IV to PO switch guidelines to guide their decision making. So, for example, we have a guideline which we launched along with other therapeutic guidelines for Vancouver Coastal Health in the Antimicrobial Stewardship App First Line that clinicians can use. And this app is free, it's really user-friendly, and it's easily accessible on phone or desktop. We also recommend to work with other healthcare providers, for example, pharmacy, who can also help champion this work and help champion IV to PO switch. And lastly, to consider adding prompts in your EMR to help facilitate IV to PO switch of highly bioavailable antimicrobials.
And so that's, I mean, you bring up really good points. And I think having a network like Aspire's definitely is a benefit because you have kind of a structure for those centers. I think like at some of our smaller centers, including like the center we work at, especially at the children's side, unfortunately, sometimes we don't even have proper instilled antimicrobial stewardship program, which makes it very tough to kind of instill some of these. And I think most of the time, as clinicians, as infectious disease physicians, we are kind of pushing for, diagnostic stewardship and antimicrobial stewardship. And I think that's been a huge drive over the last, we've been working on it for probably a few years now to try to drive kind of the use of antimicrobials or the inappropriate use of antimicrobials to reduce the misuse or inappropriate use. But yeah, I think it's been, I would say, challenging, but it's very nice because we do have similar supports like First Line app. I think that's helped a lot of us who are maybe the smaller centers that don't have that infrastructure. So I think that's a really nice tool. And one of the reasons I think I also like to spread this information to the rest of our colleagues is that sometimes it's not having kind of that team force with you. You might need to outsource to apps and other tools, and I think First Line is a very good tool. I think it has really good information on antibiogram, local antibiogram data, which is also super helpful. I guess for you guys, this has been kind of a local audit. How is there, or how can we kind of see other support staff or healthcare providers like myself, how can we help with this initiative? Definitely, like awareness, I think, is one of the key things. But are there other ways that we can kind of join networks or maybe help with information spread with First Line?
No, that's a great question. And yeah, I definitely think that medicine is a team sport and we all have to work together. An IV to PO switch is just another one of those examples that requires a collaboration between all healthcare providers to ensure success. And for us at our site, we have a pharmacy policy in place that allows pharmacists to really drive this initiative and to switch from IV to oral for highly bioavailable antimicrobials when feasible in accordance with two established criteria. So this can be pharmacy driven, but we really should be working together with the whole medical team to ensure the appropriate use and the delivery of medications. Also, I think nurses can play a role here, and I think that they can also advocate for their patients to switch to PO if they are tolerating oral.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, especially because they're doing the daily clinical assessments. And so usually know the clinical status of the patient prior to even us kind of entering the room. So I think that's a really good point. And I think your emphasis on kind of working as a team is really important. And I actually recently went to Toronto for the AMR symposium, and it was quite fascinating because it was a combined event with AMR, obviously those enthusiasts that are into AMR, and then also with Sepsis Canada. And it was really neat to see multiple areas of medicine come together, but still fighting for the exact same thing, which is to reduce AMR. And it was nice to see that it comes in layers. And there was pharmacists, there was nursing staff there, there was other support staff, there was pharmaceutical companies. I think it was one of those things that it was really nice to see that collaboration. And I think bringing that back home and, bringing it to your own center is really important because this is not one person's fight. If we're going to do this, we're going to have to do it as a team for sure. And so along those lines, are there ongoing studies or future research? Like, are there other audits or other areas that you guys are exploring through Aspires?
Well, based on our findings from our audits, we have launched an educational campaign at our site to target certain medical services as well as pharmacy. And so we have presented at rounds, and we've developed an infographic as well that is posted on select units throughout the hospital. The infographic is also posted on first line and attached to our IV to PO switch guideline as well. And we are also looking at our EMR to see where we can optimize flags in the system, which can sort of nudge providers to consider changing the route to oral if there are no contraindications to oral therapy, and whether the patient is already receiving other medications orally. Yeah, I would also like to review our order sets in our electronic system to see whether there are opportunities to optimize the way that we list our antimicrobials. For example, for these highly bioavailable antimicrobials, to list the oral route preferentially before the IV route in certain cases. And we plan to evaluate the impact of our interventions by measuring our proportional use of IV to PO of these highly bioavailable antimicrobials over time, over a long period of time, to see whether there will be a change in prescribing behavior. And then we would like to provide that feedback back to the target medical services to let them know how their usage has changed over time.
It's really nice to see the kind of the overall like long-term action plan that you guys have. And then I think the huge key point in there is looking at the outcomes and measuring them and providing that feedback. Because I think sometimes in our clinical world, things just, you become very tunnel visioned and you kind of forget about the rest of it and you're just worried about them being on pressors or clinical status changes, their heart rate, and so you really need other people to step in to remind you, like, is this actually a hemodynamics instability due to an antibiotic, or is there something else going on? So I think it's really important to kind of have that reflection. So as a clinician, for sure, I would appreciate if somebody did this for us too. Great. That's awesome. And is there anything else that Dr. Thalacata, you wanted to let us know about kind of the audit or the planetary health study before we move on to Dr. Pir Mohammed letting us know some more information about the IV to oral switch?
I just want to say that it was great experience for us. I think we've all learned a lot along the way, and it's just been really great to collaborate with all these different medical services and groups, healthcare providers, to really talk about this topic, planetary health, and to raise that awareness that is really needed.
Yeah, and we're honestly so grateful to hear all about it. And I think it's encouraging to see that things like this are happening and that maybe we could bring them into our sites as well. And so we, yeah, definitely are encouraged by the work that Aspires has done. So thank you so much for discussing that today.
Thanks.
Awesome. And then now I think some of the clinicians and pharmacists and nurses are all thinking, well, how do I decide? How do I know when to go from IV to oral? And what's really the benefit or which medications are those? So Dr. Pir Mohammed is going to give us his expertise in this area and walk us through that.
Thanks. I think it's really interesting to reflect upon history and where these myths come from that IV is better than oral antibiotics. And a lot of that came from the 1940s and 1950s when the oral antibiotics that we had at that time were quite limited. And so this culture of IV being better than oral was enshrined into us. And it's really gratifying that there are more trials coming out recently that are challenging that notion that IV antibiotics are better than oral antibiotics. So there's the Oviva trial or the POET trial that are challenging that notion and have shown that oral antibiotics are just as good as IV antibiotics when it comes to the treatment of bone and joint infections and infective endocarditis as well. So there's certain antimicrobials that we would deem as being highly bioequivalent or having high oral bioavailability, which essentially means that whether you give them intravenously or orally, there's no difference in terms of absorption as long as your patient has a functioning gut and is able to absorb the medication. So these antibiotics include things like our fluoroquinolones, ciprofloxacin, moxifloxacin, levofloxacin, and other antimicrobials that are highly bioavailable are things like metronidazole, linezolid, clindamycin, Ceftra, and some antifungals like fluconazole and voriconazole would be part of that list of highly bioequivalent antimicrobials.
Awesome. Yeah. So huge a list of probably all of those ones that you went through right now. Most of us are sitting there going like, I prescribe that all the time. And so really good to know that for those, especially that aren't as familiar with that property, I think it's really important to know that it is equivalent and as efficacious. And so kind of what are the benefits of using? So obviously one of the benefits is that we've already talked about, which there was cost effectiveness. But what are some of the other benefits of using oral antibiotics versus IV?
So I like to think about benefits in three different groups. I think switching from IV antibiotics to oral antibiotics has benefits to our patients, as well as benefits to the healthcare system and the planet. I think ultimately in medicine, our priority should be optimizing patient care and improving outcomes, but we can also see these co-benefits to the healthcare system with reductions in costs and co-benefits to the planet. With reduction in carbon footprint. So, switching from IV antibiotics to oral antibiotics has lots of benefits to our patients. We can see reductions in adverse events, especially if patients have an intravenous catheter in place. So, having a line can increase risk of infection and clots. And we can also see from literature that switching from IV antibiotics to oral antibiotics also leads to earlier discharge from the hospital. So less risk of acquiring different infections while you're admitted to the hospital. Switching from IV to oral antibiotics can also benefit our healthcare system by decreasing healthcare resources and decreasing costs. There was a really interesting study that showed the amount of time it takes a nurse to administer an IV dose of an antibiotic is about 22 minutes, whereas the amount of time it takes to administer an oral antibiotic to a patient in the hospital is about 80 seconds. So you can see significant reductions in nursing time and healthcare resources from switching from IV antibiotics to oral. And then, like Roseanne mentioned, we can also see lots of benefits to our planet by reducing unnecessary environmental waste. I do want to emphasize again that patient safety and patient quality of care will always and should always be our primary goal in healthcare. But it's nice to see that these additional co-benefits can also occur to our healthcare system and to our planet by switching from IV to oral, especially for those highly bioavailable antibiotics.
In terms of it, obviously, like the harms, the benefits and the harms will be kind of opposite of each other. But in terms of the carbon footprint, can you give us some more information in terms of like what you guys found and maybe some more details around that? Kind of outline the direct harms that were related to kind of IV versus the oral.
So the carbon footprint difference between IV and oral antibiotics is predominantly driven by the amount of plastic that's being used. So tubing, syringes, IV bags. There was one prior study that looked at a 1 week course of oral ciprofloxacin compared to IV ciprofloxacin for a 1 week course. And they found that a 1 week course of oral ciprofloxacin was associated with 1.4 kilograms of carbon dioxide equivalent, whereas IV ciprofloxacin was associated with more than 100 kilograms of carbon dioxide equivalent, which is a difference, if we use the example that Roseanne gave with driving a gas-powered vehicle, we're looking at 6.8 kilometers driving your gas-powered vehicle with an oral dose of ciprofloxacin for a week versus nearly 500 kilometers. If you're driving a gas-powered vehicle, that would be kind of along the lines of a one-week course of IV ciprofloxacin. So huge differences there, and we can see huge reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and carbon footprint when we switch from oral antibiotics, or when we switch from IV antibiotics to oral antibiotics.
Yeah, and I honestly, as I think I've discussed this with you guys before, I don't think that I've ever thought about it in that terms when I'm like prescribing the antibiotics. And I always feel after I came across your guys's work, I almost had to think like, do I ever think about this? And I should probably be thinking about it. And I think a lot of my listeners out there are probably thinking the exact same thing, because sometimes, again, you just get that tunnel vision, right? You don't think about how the effects are not directly to the patient, but to the planet. And like you mentioned, Jack, that's I think a huge component of the work that you guys have done, is to kind of look at those multiple factors and areas that it's been affecting, which is really interesting to hear. Especially, I've been in this field for a while now, so I feel like I haven't ever thought about it that way, and so it's really eye-opening, yeah, to even think about that. I mean, I think a lot of us are probably thinking, well, I mean, sure, like the patients are, sick. So how do I figure out, like, how am I going to make this IV to oral switch? Or like, what are the general recommendations? And I think it's difficult because it's not an umbrella answer, and it's probably case by case. But are there some basic recommendations when kind of a very kind of black and white, where yes, like switch to oral antibiotics is great, and like you mentioned, like IV is not better than oral in all circumstances. And so are there some general recommendations, or can this always be done, or is there situations where we should kind of step back? And probably a very broad question, but if we just kind of get a few words on your experience.
I think it's always important to think about the patient in front of you and what type of infection are you treating. There's emerging evidence that shows no difference between using oral antibiotics versus IV antibiotics for bone and joint infections, bloodstream infections, and even infective endocarditis, which is really interesting. You could always use criteria to really know if your patient could be switched from IV to PO in general terms. Are they hemodynamically stable? Are they able to take medications orally? And is there any reason for them not to absorb the medication? And as long as they're able to take other medications orally and there's no concerns about absorbing the drug, then I think there's a strong case that you could make to switch to oral, especially for the highly bioequivalent antibiotics, where there's no difference giving them intravenously versus orally. There may be certain syndromes where you might prefer an IV antibiotic. So I think I would always encourage clinicians to work with their local infectious disease specialists and antimicrobial stewardship specialists that might have guidelines and tools and more information at a local scale about when to use an IV antibiotic versus an oral.
That's great advice. And so we talked a little bit about the tools. Roseanne mentioned first line, and I think some of my listeners might be familiar with it. So I think it would be nice for us to kind of have an overview of how can they use that tool. What are the specific, I guess, key points, or when can they resort to that tool? If you want to just kind of highlight some of those features, and then if there's other specific guidelines that you support or encourage physicians and pharmacists and other healthcare providers to review when taking care of patients.
First line is an awesome tool. We were really excited to launch it for Vancouver Coastal Health in November of last year during World Antimicrobial Resistance Awareness Week. And we've seen great metrics and high usage of the app in our center. So we created an IV to PO switch guideline in first line and have seen lots of uptake. It's a great tool for clinicians to know about how to switch from an IV to oral antibiotic and dosing information, as well as what criteria they can use to ensure that there's no concerns with malabsorption of the drug. And also, it's a free tool. It's very accessible on your mobile device, which makes it really easy to adopt into clinical practice and access while at the bedside and making these clinical decisions throughout the day. There's also other resources out there like Bugs and Drugs, and there's lots of organizations that are championing IV to PO switching, as well as trials coming out that are challenging that dogma and stigma that IV antibiotics are better than oral. So that's also very gratifying to see. And I think we can all play a role in challenging that dogma and breaking that culture, and creating a new dogma that IV antibiotics are not necessarily better than oral.
Yeah, I think that if anybody does take something home from today's episode, I think that's one of the highlighted points. Because, like you mentioned, I think it's been like ever since we've been in school, it's always been, IV, IV, IV if the patient's sick, and in certain circumstances that they can't take oral or they're unable to tolerate it. Like we mentioned, that would be the case, but it doesn't have to be kind of it doesn't have to be thought about if it's more of like an efficacy type of approach. So I definitely think that's some of one of the highlights from today's episode, and we would like to emphasize that. And to be honest, I think bringing up that we have so many tools, I think we are practicing in a very good time because we do have a lot of these tools at our fingertips, which is makes our day-to-day practice easier. I think there's so many approaches that you can do, like in your while you're seeing consults or even teaching. I think it's really important to emphasize that these tools exist so that even our learners or younger trainees can really familiarize themselves with these tools. And so when they are in that bind of, can I start oral for this? This is like a severe and complicated pneumonia. They might make that decision. And I think, even why my one of my motives to bring you guys onto the podcast was to have this discussion today, because I want to make others be aware that they're, a huge part of it is awareness and just not knowing that these tools exist, how to utilize them, and where to look for them, right? And so I think it's important. It's important to see trials that are happening, and so we're excited to see kind of what that evidence shows as well. But yeah, definitely huge learning point for me today. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners today feel grateful that they tuned in. So thank you so much. Are there any kind of key points that you guys wanted to really hone in on for our audience today, besides what we've talked about?
I think my take-home message would be that switching from IV antibiotics to oral has benefits to our patients, healthcare system, and our planet. And it's really gratifying to see more and more evidence coming out that supports switching from IV to oral antibiotics to break that stigma that IV antibiotics are better than oral.
And I just wanted to say that we had a slogan for our initiative, and it's Let's Go PO. So keep that in mind.
Nice. I like that. Let's go PO. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate both of you taking the time out to come and speak about such an important or important topics. And I hope to have you guys back on the podcast for other work that you guys do through Aspires or any kind of work that you've done in the antimicrobial resistance and stewardship area, because it's fascinating. And I think a lot of centers don't have a lot of the resources. And so it's always a good way to kind of spread this information and for us to kind of bring this information back to our colleagues, some of our local smaller centers, or even centers that have a well-tuned stewardship program. Sometimes you just need kind of that outside look and see what other people are doing. So it's fantastic. So thank you so much for doing such great work in this area and giving us more information about such an important topic.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have an episode suggestion? email us at thecanadianbreakpoint@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on X at CA Breakpoint. See you again soon at the Canadian Breakpoint.